Welcome back to the Make or Break show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Ben Paik from Wobi Designs, learn how Ben is making furniture and more out of recycled skateboards. Alrighty, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. I was just checking, and this is the almost 1 year to the day anniversary of the very first episode going live. So it was actually on October 3rd. So yesterday, if you guys are listening to this live of 2017, that the show went out, and it has been a really, really fun journey since then. So if you guys have been with us since the beginning, thank you so much. Or if this is your very first one, be sure and dive into the archives. I'm trying to do these so they're kind of evergreen. And so we don't do a lot of current events stuff, but it's a lot of the stories of how a lot of the people that are making really cool things, how they got to where they are and how they're making them. And so even the episodes from last year, you can learn lots of backstories of lots of really cool people. And this show, as always, would not be possible without your guys' support. And if you guys want to support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. There's some bunch of different rewards levels, all different types of things. And your guys' ongoing support helps me put the show out for years to come. All right, so diving into this week's interview with Ben. Ben is the man behind Wobi Designs, and I saw his stuff popping up a lot here recently because the guys over at the Modern Maker podcast, so Ben Ueda, Chris Salamone, and Mike Montgomery, they do this great podcast. I encourage you guys to check them out. And then this year, they did a plywood, one-sheet plywood challenge. So build something really cool out of a sheet of plywood. And so I was going through the entries, and they even mentioned it on the show. And then Ben's pops up, Ben Paik's from Wobi, so our guest, and he created a sheet of plywood, which doesn't sound that great, but he made it out of old skateboards. So if you guys dive into his stuff, and I definitely encourage you guys to over on Instagram as well as on YouTube, he makes all kinds of things out of recycled skateboards. And so he has, he's really making some really cool stuff. And so we get into his process. First off, like, where do you find skateboards? And then how do you break them down to you can actually get stock, and then what it's like to actually use them. And so he's got some fun projects, a really cool guy, and he's making some lots of fun things. So he's got some fun projects, really fun guy. And so let's dive into it. So without further ado, here is our interview with Wobi Designs. Hey guys, welcome back to the Make or Break show. We're hanging out with Ben Paik today from Wobi Designs, calling in from the West Coast a little bit earlier for you there. But thank you for jumping on and chatting with me, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So super excited to have you on because a lot of people work with a bunch of different materials. We probably got a lot of people that are like woodworkers on the show. But you make your own materials from something that was already something before. People have probably seen your stuff a little bit here recently, just because you do crazy stuff with skateboards. And so we'll definitely get into all that and how you got into that. But I guess starting out, so did you skateboard growing up? Like, has that been part of your life?
So it's actually kind of pathetic, but when I was riding it in seventh grade or sixth grade, because that's when I came to America from Korea, and all my friends were skating. So I started to skate and started riding regular, and then started doing tricks goofy. So it just didn't make sense. So I kind of pretty much stopped after a couple of years, and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm not having fun doing this, and I'm just comfortable enough to ride. And I wouldn't consider myself as a skater.
That's funny. Yeah. So it was, so people that don't know Goofy, is you're basically skating reverse.
So yes. So I would ride normally like a normal person. And then as soon as I want to do any kind of pop tricks, I would have to switch my stance, which doesn't make sense.
That's crazy.
So I would have to do like a Mongo push, which all these skaters think I'm a, yeah. I just don't do it. Yeah.
So why was the trick stance different than just like the normal stance? Like, did you just?
So what I would do, I would practice doing ollies, just standing still.
Okay, gotcha.
but wouldn't even know that I was, my foot was switched.
Yeah.
So it just, yeah, it, trust me, it just doesn't make sense. And I just completely dropped it.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm okay with just riding it here and there. Yeah. You know, like if my, if I'm parking too far, I'll just ride my board. But other than that, I don't go to the skate park or do a gnarly trick and all that.
So we haven't seen you like on X Games or anything.
Yeah. No.
That's funny. All right. So, you get into it in seventh grade. Where in, so where in Korea did you come from?
I grew up in, I mean, no one's going to understand this, but it's in the middle of country and it's very countryside. So there's only one elementary school at the village that I was at. I even remember seeing like houses made out of hay.
Oh, wow.
It's like really, really countryside. They used to plow the field with cows and just really countryside. And what was I talking about?
Just where?
Oh, yeah. So that's where I came from. And kind of like everybody was doing things with their hands. It's a farming village. And my dad was a head pastor there at a church.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So since you were in kind of the rural side of things, was like the making piece, was that more just like something just everyone did just because you didn't have maybe access to some of the stuff we have?
Yeah, because this, I think this is before internet came, or I mean, I'm sure there was internet, but we just never got it. And so what we had to do for fun, we had to create things. So I just remember making things a lot out of raw materials, like a little slingshot made out of tree branches. We would poke holes on the bottom of these cans and fill it with hay and light it on fire and start like just like throwing it. And like all these little small things were very creative in a way that you had to do it with your hands because we don't have any resources. We don't have fancy toys that we could all just kind of play with. No Game Boys, or I think one person had a Game Boy, and that's kind of what was happening growing up.
I was talking with Glenn from DIY Creators on YouTube, and he grew up in Jamaica, and he was saying he made slingshots, like that was his like go-to. That's cool. So you came to the States and you said in seventh grade? Or no, when you were seven?
In sixth grade. Okay. I came here in 2000. Yeah.
2000. So was it LA? Is that where you guys came to?
We moved to San Diego for like 2-3 months because that's where my aunt was living at. And then we came to Downey, which is part of LA. And
cool. What brought you guys here?
My parents wanted better opportunity for us. I think back then, my parents thought that Korea wasn't doing as well as they were doing, or they're doing now, and it just seemed like there's more opportunity here than staying in Korea.
So in high school, you weren't the skater guy, it sounds like.
I wasn't. I was going to church all the time. I was in praise team. I was into sports. I was in tennis, volleyball, also soccer for a little bit as well. So I was really active, I think. I just wanted to try different things. I even wanted to do football too, but my parents just wouldn't allow that to happen. So
they didn't want all the crazy concussion stuff that's especially happening now. So did you get into making it all like in high school? Like, were you building stuff too? Okay. So it's just,
I think
it's kind of your normal high school.
Yeah. Just normal high school, just going to school, hang out friends. I think only making that I would actually did was probably making my bike. I used to ride fixed gear bikes. And I would just get these like old bikes and convert it into fixed gears and kind of customize it on for myself. But other than that, nothing.
Were you painting the bikes? Like, were you getting, you're just like retrofitting like older bikes? Is that what you're
Yeah. Doing? So I'll just get like an old Schwinn bike and get new spokes, new seats, new tires, new rims, things like that. Nothing fancy where I'm just like welding stuff up together.
Gotcha.
Or like, yeah. I don't think I even sanded it before I painted it.
just spray paint.
So I just really didn't know anything about it, but I just knew that I kind of wanted to get a bike and customize it on myself and not spend too much money making it.
So you went to UC Irvine, is that right?
Yes.
For sociology?
Mm-hmm.
So what were you thinking?
So the story is this. Yeah, the story is I went to a community college and then transferred to UC Irvine. And honestly, I wanted to go to UCLA for communications major.
Okay.
But I thought I was short on a couple of the units.
Okay.
But I talked to the counselor after I applied to everywhere and then the deadline was set. He was saying, you have enough credits. You would have gotten 100%. I don't know why you didn't do this. So I pretty much settled for UC Irvine. And yeah. At that time, I really didn't know what I was going to do.
Right.
And I was like, what's a really fun subject that I could kind of study? And so I landed on sociology because that's, you know, study of human social network and things like that. So I focus my energy on Asian American histories as well. So
okay, cool.
Yeah.
So was it like a minor in that, or just you had a lot of electives in Asian American?
Well, history? there's a couple classes that you could pick, and you could kind of like focus in one of the areas, and that's
inside of sociology.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's cool. So you got out and. UC Irvine is in Irvine, I'm guessing. Where's mm-hmm. that in, for people that don't know, like, where's that in relation to LA?
Costa Mesa.
Okay.
Would be like Laguna Beach.
Okay. Gotcha.
Newport Beach.
Okay.
It's extremely clean and nice and way too safe.
Yeah.
Like everything closes at 7 o'clock.
Oh, really?
It's okay. It's like a perfect suburbia where like everything's clean, great schools. Someone even called the cops on me when I was taking a picture of the sky.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah. It's ridiculously safe. I think it was like number one safest city in the world or something like that at one point. So it's like really, really safe and nice. Yeah,
that is crazy.
Kind of boring. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So you said that, like, unfortunately, it was real safe. Was it just because there wasn't like stuff to do, or like just people that were?
Yeah,
it sounds like
nothing to do. It's just kind of like it's either families or college students. So it wasn't like there's no bars open until late at night.
Yeah,
I didn't really have that much fun in our.
So when did you graduate?
I graduated in 2013, and then I still didn't know what to do. So I was working at my friend's mom's store in LA, which is in Fashion District, and which she was specializing in wholesale women's lingerie. And so what I would be doing is talking to clients, making sales at the same time. I was handling the back end of things, shipping things out. And pretty much it was this temporary job that kind of made me realize that I really didn't want to do this.
Yeah.
That I want my own business, that I want to not waste my time waiting for orders or, you know, not have as much control as I wanted to. So I was looking for different kind of jobs, and I landed on this other job where I was representing Samsung at a store as well. And even there, I was just kind of like putting in my time, none of my skills would put into it. It was just me just being there, standing there and talking to customers. And yeah. So I knew I really wanted something different, but I just didn't know. But that's when I realized I had an open space at my parents' place, a room, my old room that wasn't being used. So did I go too far?
No, that's perfect.
Yeah.
So that desire just to do your own thing, you said it was kind of rooted in control, but like control and just the full process. Like, was that like, do your parents, like, do they own their own businesses now? Or was that kind of really the start of you wanting to do your own thing?
My dad's a pastor still here in LA. That's where my shop is at. It's connected to the church. But I think the biggest reason why I did this is me sitting at a place, putting in my time or work, but not really doing much. You know, it's like, let's say you're a cashier, no offense, but you're sitting there giving change or taking orders. I mean, anybody could do this.
Right.
So why am I sitting here doing this and wasting my time when I know my value is better than this? And I know I could learn quicker than anybody else. And I know that I could work harder. And so only thing that was really stopping me at that point was the risk that I'm about to take. And so I was scared that I'm going to lose all my money that I'm going to put in. I'm going to lose all the time that I'm putting in right now. And you know, that's kind of what stopped me up till like 2-3 years. I just kind of like, oh, should I do it? Should I do it? And then never did it until at one point I was working, which is my current seasonal job right now. I'm working as a car manufacturer representative. And so I go to different auto shows and talk about cars, and talk to clients and things like that. But there's downtime where I'm not working. So I'm at a completely different city, which was in Philadelphia. I'm sitting outside on a bench, just literally thinking about my life, where I'm at, why am I here, and how can I do better? And that's when I realized I'm just going to do this. I rather suffer and do the things that I love rather than just literally complaining and, you know, just stressing out, just being at one place, not even trying. And that's how I got here.
Gotcha. So at that point, when you said the work you're putting in, like you were nervous if it wasn't going to work, like, were you building the things you're making now, like out of skateboards, or did you try like a bunch of different things?
As soon as I decided that I was going to make things out of skateboards or make a shop, I completely went into building the shop first. So that's when I kind of started YouTubing everything, started figuring out how to build it. And so as soon as I built the shop, I thought I was going to sell like, I don't know, 1,000 cutting boards a month and like stuff like that. And I just realized how many people there are in this world right now trying to do woodworking, trying to make you know, very similar items that didn't really stand out. And so that's when I decided just might as well start with skateboards. And so I started calling different skate shops, got a bunch of materials, started testing some stuff out. And to be honest, I never started with any other material except for skateboard.
Okay. So going back, so you make the decision, this is like, you want to go after this. You hadn't worked, like you hadn't even built out a shop yet. Is that right? Am I getting the timeline right?
I did. Yeah. I didn't have the shop. Okay. So I had go ahead.
What were you saying?
Yeah. I didn't have the shop. So I had my old room that was next to my parents' place that I had to tear down, built a new shop out of it. Took me about 2-3 months. And then I went full head on making clocks, I think. Yeah, I think it was clocks first, and then did a Kickstarter. It was nice that it was successful. And then, yeah.
So where did the idea of skateboards come from?
So there's a,
did you see?
Yeah, there's an account called Hiroshi. He's a Japanese artist who makes crazy sculptures out of skateboards. And it just looks so amazing. And what he focuses on is his artwork, and he wants to make sculptures and put things on display. But I kind of wanted to make it so that everybody has access to it. Everybody could own it. Just something that, you know, kind of highlights your home decor a little bit. And so, yeah.
So how did you go from seeing that picture to like actually having a finished product? Like, were you able to figure anything out just from what he was doing, or was it all like experiments for you?
I was pretty much like studying his Instagram for a while. I was going down all the way to the past. But there's a huge community, not huge, but there's a community of people who recycle skateboards. And there's actually quite few. And so I started kind of reaching out. We started becoming friends. And we start talking about, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And so that kind of community really helped me shape into who I am right now. But it was a lot more trial and error, I want to say. Because I had so much time, because I have a seasonal job where I don't work from April till September. So I have about like 5 months solid of just doing whatever the hell I want to do. And so, it was, everything was trial and error. Like the plywood challenge, I didn't think it was going to work, but it worked. So, yeah.
So when did you make your first, I guess, piece, or what was your first piece? Was it those clocks for Kickstarter?
It was a clock. Yeah. It was a clock that, I made for my, old boss, the women's lingerie store. She knew that I was starting a business, and she was just like, I want to help you, be the first supporter. So yeah, it started out with clocks and then bottle openers. And then I make a few cutting boards too, but I realized this is not food safe, and there's a lot of dirt and like disgusting glue residue all over the skateboards.
Yeah.
And I just kind of like tried to relate to other woodworkers as well. So if they're making bowls, I want to kind of try making bowls. If they're making speakers, I want to kind of try making speakers as well. So
what was the process just on the actual making side, not the whole crazy part of doing skateboards, but it sounded like this is kind of your first time getting your hands dirty just in a shop, just making stuff, period, right?
Mm-hmm. In terms of making side, I think I have a little bit of experience to it because my dad is very handy. And so when we moved into the church here in LA, when we first moved in, we had to do the whole floors again. We had to paint everything. So in terms of like hand-eye coordination, I was really good at it. In terms of making things, I think it really comes to patience. A lot of times I was at the shop just kind of like standing there and thinking about a lot of things and taking my time and trying to figure that out. And I did cut my hand once on the table saw because I was wearing gloves.
On that old one?
Yeah. Huh?
Yeah. Oh, on that old, like...
Yeah, the old Ryobi table saw because I was wearing gloves and, you know, I didn't know that you're not supposed to have gloves.
Yeah.
And so like these little small mistakes, I'm learning as I go and hopefully I don't get cut further.
So your very first thing you made doesn't have to be the thing you sold, but was it that clock that you were making for somebody else? Like, what was the first thing that came together and you're like, oh wow, that like this is actually really cool?
I can't remember. I think it was the clock. It was okay. So the whole idea was, how do I make a skateboard, especially the tail, how do I make that flat? showing all the lines. And so it first, pretty much, you know, any, when it comes to woodworking, you're literally trying to make something flat and square. And that's pretty much exactly what I wanted to do. And so when I glued up the nose pieces, it ended up being a little bit circle-ish. And so I was like, why don't I just cut a circle out of this? And then when I cut the circle out of it, I was like, oh, this could be a perfect clock. And so that's when I decided, oh, this could work.
And yeah.
So,
so fast forwarding to today, are you selling products? I know you, it sounds like you're working with, you've got some sponsors on some of the stuff that you're doing. Like what's kind of the business look like for you?
So right now I'm doing a lot more commission work. And so people would reach out to me, and ask me what I want, what they wanted to be made. And it's, so when it comes to like selling smaller stuff, I just hate the fact that I have to take pictures of every single one of those items. They all look completely different. So let's say I make 100 pens. If I'm making 100 pens, I have to make like 4 different detail shots. That's 400 pictures. I have to edit 400 pictures, post 100 items onto the website. And that's kind of what's kind of stopping me from making a website, because I don't want to manage all that. And so what I've been getting lucky with is I would make everything up until during Christmas time or like during early December. I have there's a flea market here in LA, which is like two miles down from my house. And it's Smorgasburg, and it's really nice little artisan craft show that happens every Sunday. But during that time, when I go and put on the show, I got lucky enough where I could just kind of dump it out.
Yeah. I didn't think about that, because, I mean, I guess all the boards are like unique, like color-wise too. Yeah. And so when you're making stuff out of it, like it really is, like you need to see it because it's pretty dramatic.
In a way, I can't make the two same thing. Two of the identical ones, because all the colors are a little different, unless I'm using the same type of boards. But yeah, it's just taking pictures. When I did the Kickstarter, I had like 70-80 different clocks, and I didn't know how to use Lightroom. I didn't know that you could edit all of them together. I was literally going one by one, editing 2,000 pictures just so that I could put it on. And it just didn't really make sense.
So what's the like reaction from people, like especially when you were first starting to put stuff out there? Like what would people like tell you?
It was nice. A lot of the feedback is like, oh, that's cool. You know, this is made out of skateboards. That's amazing. You know, but a lot of times when someone really catches their eye, they just kind of stare at it for a while. And that's kind of what I like the most. I took like 3 different coffee tables there, and I was just taking it there for display because I knew that price was a little too high. But this one guy, he comes in and he just stands there and not even ask any question. He just stares at it. And then he disappears. I'm like, where did he go? And then he comes back after 2 hours with cash. And he's like, here. And I was like, wow.
That's cool.
And then he just took it. I was like, he didn't even say anything. He didn't even ask me anything. And so,
yeah,
I think that was probably one of the best feelings that I got from that show, because he wasn't even interested in who I am. He just liked what I made. And he said, I like this. And he just took it. That's all I want.
Fast forwarding, I guess, to this year, you started putting some of your projects up on YouTube. What was kind of the motivation? I mean, you just mentioned how crazy it is to edit pictures. Like, it's a whole nother level when you're, those pictures are like a moving. Yeah. So it's a lot of work. So what was your motivation to get into that?
So I was lucky enough to be invited to Modern Maker podcast with Ben Ureta, Mike Montgomery, and Chris Salamone. And when Mike was in Joshua Tree with Ben, I went out to go visit them, and I was kind of talking to them, hanging out. and we shot a video together making a stool. And during the whole process, it wasn't really taking the time out of the work itself or making it.
Yeah.
It just seemed kind of fun to kind of shoot videos, film each other, get these cool shots. And I had a camera already, and I was into photography a little bit in terms of like, I like traveling. So I like taking pictures, videos. So I was like, you know what? Let's make this into one of my tools so that I could kind of market myself in a way that, you know, on the YouTube side. And so, yeah, shortly after that, they were like, oh, we're going to do a Rockler plywood challenge. And I knew last year when they did it, I think Ben was talking about how the minimalist maker, she came out with that, and she got like tons of views, and she exposed herself to the world. And that's kind of, I took that as an opportunity. I was like, you know what, if I get into this contest, there's a chance that, you know, a lot more people could see it rather than me just coming out on my own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So to get into the process of like actually making, well, I guess we could use that, the plywood, as a, like a good example. But you mentioned that you're just using the tails of the boards. Is that right?
No, that was just for the clock. So every project, yeah, okay. Every project has different sections of the skateboards that I use. But mainly,
where do you get skateboards?
So I go to different skate shops. I just call them and ask. This is how it goes. I call them. I was like, hey, I'm calling about any broken skateboards you might have at the shop. They're like, no, we just throw it away. So that's when I say, hey, what if I could convince you that you could save those for me and I'll make you something in return? And they're like, okay, I'm listening. And then I go to the shop. I show them my business card. I show them my Instagram. I give them like a little bottle opener, a little pen.
Yeah.
Like, this is so cool. And then they start calling me when they have the boards. In exchange, I give them, you know, little gifts. Yeah.
That's cool. So you're getting your product then for free.
In a way, like the material, is free, but in terms of cost-wise, yeah, it's free, but you have to put in the time to go to them, go pick it up, go call them every, you know, once or twice a month, all around the city, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it's kind of like pallets, except I would imagine skateboards are a lot harder than like pallets.
And I mean, like one skateboard is like equivalent of like one third or not even one, like one tenth of a pallet wood. Cause it's like thin. Yeah. It's not much material you could work with if you just have one. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is a skateboard made out of? Is it just like layered plywood?
So yeah, it's usually seven layers of Canadian maple alternating, and each veneer is colored with something else. A lot of times it's...
Yeah, why are ahead. They... No, what, sorry, I keep interrupting you.
Go ahead.
So yeah, why are they colored, like the veneers?
I think they're colored for aesthetic reasons. I think... Okay. In terms of functional, there's no functionality to it. It just looks nice.
Yeah.
And when they color it, like different colors with different color combination, it looks really nice. And the grain really pops out too. And yeah, it looks really nice.
That's cool. Yeah, for some reason I thought it was like particle board, like layers of particle board. But it's like, it's hardwood layered with veneers. That's strong and cool.
It's super hard. I think, yeah, it's heavy. It's dense. There's a lot of glue in there. It's harsh on the blades. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough material to work with.
Yeah. So once you get the material, how do you get like stock out of it?
So you have to glue it up at least once.
Okay.
And so, what I would try to do is try to match the concave of the skateboards. Give me 1 second. I got a skateboard. All right. Okay. So there's a... That's my laundry. So if you look at the skateboards, there's a nose and the tail. And then if you look at from the bottom side, I even put a tape on it. This from here to here, it's flat. And so I reference this edge a lot. But pretty much, let's say if I'm gluing up a blank for a bowl, I would have, I think it was about 16 different nose and tails glued, pressed together. And I made my own like little hydraulic press out of a bottle jack. And that seems to work really well.
So you said that you have to do it at least once. Do you do multiple glue ups then for some things?
Yeah. So like for my, right now I'm working on some pens. So I would have to glue it up once, cut it, and then glue it up again. So gotcha. Let's say if you're not gluing it up once at all, there's such a small limitations on what you can make out of this. So like, I don't know, a lot of people make rings. You just have to cut a little circle out of this skateboard and make a ring. So that's nothing that's like really impressing people. Whereas when you glue it up multiple times, you get these different patterns that you won't see if you just glue it up once. Yeah.
That makes sense. So the top part, like the, I guess the sticky part that you would stand on, I'm imagining you're having to, do you take that off then?
Yeah. So it's fairly simple, but a lot of people have, you know, they struggle too. I did struggle in the beginning, but if you just heat it up with a heat gun, but I live in LA, so it's usually hot outside. So I'll just let it out on the grass and then let it heat up for like 20 minutes. And then the sticky residue loosens up a little bit. But the thing is, depending on different grip tape companies, the strength of these grip tapes varies. So some of them, I could just pull it out with one pull, whereas some of them, I would, it just rips every like little piece. So you would have to take more time taking these off.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of the more stressful tasks and grimier tasks, but you have to do it.
So once you've got your stock, I guess going back to the sheet of plywood you made out of this, was that four by, was it like a standard like 4x8?
Yeah, it was a actual size 4x8, 3/4 inch thick.
Jeez.
It was heavy. It was like three times the weight of regular
it's
plywood.
It's so dense.
But it so was not strong. It wasn't strong at all. It was a lot of people commented you should have staggered the joints, and I didn't realize that it was going to be that weak. So it wasn't as strong as I want it to be, but I made it work so that it's sitting on my in my room right now.
You just have a sheet of plywood. That's awesome. It probably makes for a really cool backdrop though.
No, I made a clothing rack out of it. And it's at my house right now. But yeah.
That's sweet. And I'll make sure to include a link, because I know you got a video, like the full build that you did with it. But and you might have mentioned on the video, so sorry if you're re-saying something you've already done. But how many like skateboards, like roughly, like went into that?
I think so. The reason why I started doing that is because the skateboards were cut in half or snapped in half.
Okay.
And so the majority of the bulk of the skateboard that I like to use is the middle section here. It's straight. There's a concave this way. But other than that, this is a really great material to use with. But on the plywood challenge, everything was broken in half. So I wanted to get kind of clean that up. It was taking a lot of space in my shop. I wanted to get rid of all of them. And so I started cutting it up in the middle section, started gluing it up. I think it was about 200 skateboards.
Jeez. Okay. Yeah.
Like combined. So it was like 400 of those like half cut pieces.
Cut up.
But yeah.
Jeez, how long did it take you to like glue everything up and build it?
The cutting it and gluing it up, it only took maybe a week. It didn't take too long. I think the biggest problem I was having was cutting it into veneers. I snapped about eight Resaw King blades.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Laguna was nice enough to send me a couple and, you know, repair a couple of them as well. But I'm having a terrible time being a machinist and how to kind of set the blades and kind of tension. I think the point was the tension. I think I was going off the measurements, but I realized it was like way too tight. And so, yeah, that was probably the most difficult process in terms of making the plywood video.
So now, like moving forward, is it more like the content piece that you see yourself moving into, or is it like still making like custom products for people? Kind of what's next for you?
I'm still honestly trying to figure myself out.
Okay.
So this is like Instagram would be my daily content, kind of show you what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. YouTube would be a good channel for my marketing side where everybody could actually see what I'm doing, kind of get entertained by that. I am going to make a website soon, but in a couple weeks, I start my seasonal job again. So I won't be at the shop a lot of times. I'll be traveling for work. So yeah, during that time, that's when I kind of start thinking and reevaluating and see what I'm going to do next year. So we'll see.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. You kind of have like a seasonal like approach to it. Just with the way your job lines up. So
yeah, it's nice because I'm so bad at multitasking. And so if I were to have a job and do this at the same time, I don't think I could do it. I'm just like so bad at time management. So like I need to take my time to actually think about what I'm making, you know. So yeah. It's really nice. It kind of financially supports what I'm doing too, in a way.
I appreciate your time and chatting with me. It was a blast. I need to find skate shops where I'm at.
You should.
Although with all the cutting, that sounds ridiculous. Yeah. I don't know. But the end product is real cool.
Thank you.
But so for people that do want to check out your stuff, just Wobi Designs on YouTube and Instagram, is that the best place to send them?
Yeah, Wobi Design on Instagram and YouTube with no S.
Design, okay. No S. Okay, sorry. I will make sure and include that right in the show notes. Well, cool, man. Well, thank you so much for chatting. It was a blast.
Thank you, Brandon. I loved it.
All right, thanks for hanging around to the end of the show. This is where I give you guys a quick update about what is going on in my shop. One thing I've realized is, especially on upcoming builds, I feel like I tend to talk about them a good bit here, and then sometimes they never happen, like the X-Wing Swing, which I still want to do, has not happened yet, and I hope to get into it. So maybe this shouldn't be like what's working or what's on the workbench, but kind of what's what I've been playing around with in my head. And so that is, and this should be the actual next build, is a end table for our nursery that is going to have a Bluetooth speaker built into it. So a few episodes back, we got into building speakers for your house and doing all these cool things with Kirby Meets Audio. And so I'm going to be making that. I actually have the walnut. It's chilling in my garage right now. And so I just need to get that milled down so I can get started on it. So you guys should see that here really, really, really soon. But a fast project that will be happening, because it's got to happen before Halloween, is we're going to make some foam masks. I think We're going to dress my daughter up like one of the Incredibles, like the baby Incredible, even though he's a boy. We're going to dress her up. And I want to make some masks. And I kind of want to get into the prop world a little bit and foam and all that kind of stuff. And so I'm going to try it on myself first, but where you basically cut out a template, cut it out with the X-Acto knife in the foam, and then you heat the foam up and you can actually kind of form it around your face. So I'm going to give that a shot kind of as my first entry, because I really want to get into building some helmets and doing some cool prop stuff down the line. So be looking for those. I just released a video on making a quick stamp on the CNC out of carvable rubber. That is fun. As always, I'm still sending out football stadium signs and just random signs over on Etsy. If you guys are interested in those at all, you can check that out at Cullum and Co. on Etsy. And actual builds are the Make or Break Shop, not the Make or Break Show, but the Make or Break Shop over on YouTube. So until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.